Okay, it's 8:30, so why don't we convene the meeting, the regular and supplemental meetings, and call them to order and recess the supplemental meeting. First item of business is on your diligent, page 5, the moment of silence for those police and fire officers who passed during the end of February, early March. So let's take a moment for silence, please. Okay, thank you. Next is our approval of the minutes from our last meeting. It's on pages 6 to 12. I think everybody has had a chance to look at those. Any comments or corrections? Hearing none, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved there, Bill.
Yeah, who is that?
Gilbert.
Okay, Gilbert, thank you. We have a second, please?
Second, Nick.
Second.
Okay, very good. I think I heard Nick. If you could just let us know when you do that, that would be great. But, okay, we got a first, second. Anybody not approve of the minutes? Okay, they are approved then. Then we go to page 13, which is the consent agenda. And Kelly, again, I'll ask you, is there anything unusual on here that we should be aware of?
Good morning, everybody. No, there's nothing unusual on this consent agenda.
Okay. Again, everybody's had a chance to look at it. Anybody have any questions before we get a motion to approve? Okay. Could I get a motion to approve the consent agenda?
This is Ken. Move to approve.
Thank you, Ken. Okay, second?
Michael, second.
Okay, like that was second. Anybody not approve? Hearing none, then we will go ahead and consider them approved. Okay, our next item is the open to see if anybody has public comment. John, is it star 5 or 5 star? Or
5 star on your phone.
5 star if anybody wants to address the board.
I have one.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take that. Thank you.
Good morning. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
My name is Bourbon Smith, Dallas Police Officer at the Northeast Division. Got a few things I'd like to discuss. Number one, I just want to say thank you to Kelly and Armando for always answering my emails and calls. You guys are very responsive. And talking with Kelly about getting us with the officers, young and old, about drop and the pension, and she's working on that. Thank you for starting to work on those items. That's very important to the officers. I'm going to give you the time that you need to get that done for us, Kelly. Per our conversation a couple of weeks ago, the officers look very forward to seeing you guys in person. My understanding is from talking to some of the board members, people are concerned about not coming to the stations because of COVID. The department, the Northeast Division and other stations are probably the most secure places to go because most of us have had the vaccinations, number one. My other question is individuals traveling. I want to find out who has traveled since March 2020 up until April of this month, who has went on pension business. Because if you can travel and go out of town, you can come to these stations. We come to work. You can come and talk to us on the patio or outside on the sally ports and answer these officers' questions. We cannot have a repeat, guys, of what happened 3-4 years ago by us not being informed and just answering questions or only seeing our reps during election time. That's unacceptable. I want to find out if Ken Haven traveled on April 1st. We reached out to him via email and our text trying to find this question out. We have to know these questions because if you can travel and go there, you're being an ex-officer, Ken. You know how important this is to the officers. You know the officers who have been through and that's just not going to work anymore. I've emailed you on March 25th. It took you until April 7th to respond. I know you check your emails. You say you're concerned about your family on your email. I understand that. I don't want anything to happen to any of you guys' families. But if you can travel, Ken Haven, you can come to this station and talk to these officers. And I speak for a lot of police officers. You ask me in your text or your email, who is the we? The we are all the officers who you haven't seen since you've been elected. That process also needs to change. We cannot have officers. We cannot have officers or ex-officers. But more than anything, we can't have ex-officers representing us on the pension board. Your interest is different than ours.
Well, that is covered by the legislation, and that people get a chance to vote and nominees get made. But as to your first point, I will follow up. I saw copies of these emails, and I will follow up with Kelly, and we'll get you a response to the extent that we can. I mean, there are privacy issues on people like myself having to disclose whether I travel or not. And we're going to talk in a minute or two about trying to open up even our meetings, but we've got to be respectful to people's situation and privacy. But we'll get you an answer, sir.
No, I'm not concerned about that part. My question is, if you can travel and have people travel since last March on pension business, that's it's like it's a secret to get an answer from you guys on that. Has anyone traveled?
Those are in the minutes, but I'll have Kelly get back to you on that with what we've disclosed in our meeting materials and in our minutes, because I think that data is there, actually.
Well, let me ask you, are you telling me that's some kind of privacy issue to find out if someone has traveled on city money to go somewhere? I'm just asking, is that what you're telling me?
No. I thought you were asking who was vaccinated and who wasn't vaccinated and who traveled.
No, sir, I never asked anything. That's HIPAA and all that. I asked who traveled since last March. Who has traveled out of the city of Dallas via vehicle, plane, train, car?
Okay.
To take care of pension business. That is a question that we want to know. We want to know who has, because I want to make sure those people aren't telling me that they can't come to the station and meet with these officers. When I spoke with Mr. Haven via email, he wanted to ask me, has this been approved by the chief here that they can do that? Absolutely. The answer is yes. I asked my bosses again this morning. They said, why would they not? I need to hear from you.
Officer Smith, we can get you that information on who has traveled on pension business since last March. I
appreciate
that.
Is that Kelly? Sounds like Kelly.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it's me.
Okay, perfect. No, I have no beef with anyone, and like when I spoke with you, Kelly, and thank you for what you did. You're the only one that's come out to our station 2 or 3 years ago and answered all questions. You didn't do it by video. You didn't do it by PowerPoint. You came out, just answered questions and talked to the officers. And this is what we're asking for. And we got to get a change, guys, ladies and gentlemen, of having an active representative on the police department representing us. And I know that's all the legislation, all that. I need to find out who is in favor of what I'm asking. Anybody on this call in favor of what I'm asking? Do you see how important that could be?
Okay, thank you. Very good. We hear you. Kelly will get back to you what you asked for on that information. I think we need to move on. Do you have any other point that you wanted to raise besides that one?
Yeah, I'm not done yet. Hold on. My understanding is there's no limit on my time. I got like 2 or 3 more minutes, so I want to get this out. I don't want to come here every month and talk to you guys. My next deal is Fidelity has an individual that comes out to the stations every year. They are an entity that the city uses or deals with that we put our money into. We want the same thing that Fidelity does. They come out and sit in the detail or the kitchen or wherever the station allows and answers questions for a whole day. I want the pension board to have someone start working on getting someone that can come out once or twice a year to the different divisions that want it and just talk to the officers maybe in private at the stations who want to ask you questions that may directly deal with them or about the pension. I don't think that's too much to ask. We have everybody coming here offering, selling us everything in the world. How come that can't happen? We really want our representative, Mr. Haven, to come to the station and talk to us. Can you do that, Ken?
Well, okay, I think we need to take that offline, sir. We appreciate that. But is there another issue other than that? We've heard that you loud and clear. Kelly will get back to you with the information you requested. She'll try to address the other issue as well. But, you know, the pandemic has created an unusual situation. And
not if you're traveling. If you're traveling, I'll point to mute. If anyone's traveled, then we really don't want to hear about the other issues that may happen. Because if you're traveling and you're dealing with people who you don't know who've been vaccinated, you can come to these stations. Ken Hayden, can you answer any questions other than being quiet? Can you say anything to the officers here?
We don't really need – Kelly will get back to you, sir. I appreciate that. We don't really try to get into a debate here in this session. We hear your comment. We'll address it.
How long do you think that would take to hear back from you? What is your name? I don't even know who I'm talking to, honestly. What's your name?
My name is Bill, chairman of the board.
You're the chairman of the board?
Yes.
So, again, I'm going to be waiting for responses to all the things I've asked about and any changes that we brought up, because I speak for me and I speak for a lot of officers. And we're just not going to let this go away, man. This is not going to go away. We need to hear from you guys more often.
We will get back to you in a very, very short period of time. I will follow.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else that wants to comment? John, anybody?
I have no one.
Okay. Why don't we go on to our next item on our agenda? It's my report on, again, it's almost follows this as on reopening. I think there's been some discussion about people's desires to meet in person rather than by Zoom and phone. I know some other boards I'm on are starting that dialogue and discussion. What I thought we should do is, if each of you don't have a problem, let Kelly know, A, if you've been vaccinated, and B, if you would be willing to meet in person starting May or June if the entire board is vaccinated. That's where I am. I've been totally vaccinated. I don't have a problem in a session. But if you could each let her know your position, and then we'll take that information and try to decide, does it make sense to reconvene, or whether or not we would push it back further at this point in time to a later date, either in the summer or fall, or whatever. But that's all I really have to say on that. I don't know if anybody has anything they would want to add to that in terms of it.
Bill, one thing I would add is a year ago we had John Holt measure the boardroom. And there is room for 11 trustees to sit around the round table being 6 feet apart, just so you know that. And then we would have staff along that back wall, probably.
Yeah, and if that's the case, we would probably need to know what staff has been vaccinated as well, if they're willing to share that information. Okay. Okay, very good. We now move on to Kelly. Do you want to talk about the trustee?
Oh, I just have one question.
Sure, go ahead.
What if you're not vaccinated but you had COVID?
Information, I think we sort of get a sense of what we would feel comfortable, because I think that's only good for 2 or 3 months, based on some of the things I hear, although nothing's ever consistent. Would have to try to factor that into whatever decision we made.
Okay, just
hey, Tina, it's Armando. If you want, after this meeting, we can have an offline. I can tell you what the fire department is doing in that case.
Okay.
Kind of give you some background on that. So, okay.
Okay, thank you.
And that may be helpful for you and Kelly and I to have that discussion after we get whatever information we get, is just to try to understand what you guys are thinking and doing in other areas.
Sure, no problem. Happy to help.
Great. Okay. Kelly, do you want to cover the trustee issue? Or no? I'll add a comment.
I do. Okay, so on page 16, there is a list of three trustees, Steve, Mark, and Alan, just notifying the rest of the board that the their terms expire August 31st, 2021. Just so you know, the reason that we do that is it's required in the election policy that the board adopted, that in April of every year we let you know which terms are due to expire, so you would know if we're preparing for an election or if we want to do some outreach to the mayor's office in preparation for terms expiring. So that's what this item is about.
And actually, I did that yesterday. I sent Tristan Holman, the mayor's policy director, a copy of this slide, basically, reminding them that of this reappointment. So I guess, Alan, Mark, Steve, if you haven't heard from the mayor's office, we can follow up or you can follow up, but I think we need to make sure this occurs. I encourage, without talking to you, a continuity.
Thank you, Bill and Kelly, for reminding me of this. I'm happy to reach out to the mayor's office, as I would love to continue to be a part of this board and what we're trying to accomplish for the men and women of our police and fire departments.
Great. That's good. And then,
hey, Bill, it's Nick. Can I say one thing?
Sure, please.
Yeah. And I've expressed this to Kelly. You know, I think that when we dealt with our kind of early issues when the board first came together, you know, four or five years ago, we had a lot of sort of structural conflict because of where people were coming from and so on. But that as we got to know each other and we saw and trusted each other, I think we engaged in some great decision making and a lot of those preconceived sort of views got sort of pushed aside. And so, you know, we have several new people. And I know, you know, just from my own state, I sort of lament and mourn a little bit that I don't know some of you and I haven't sort of engaged in that face-to-face dialogue and decision-making that I think was so helpful in the first, you know, kind of realm of the board. So, you know, we you know, have a bunch of issues that are lingering out there in terms of funding and so on over the next couple of years. And so I really think being physically together and getting to know each other is critical as we face those issues down the road.
Yeah, I would echo that. But I
would like to also say one thing for those of us that are elected and have limited terms. That I have to really just underscore and bold that I also agree with Nick. The continuity is very quintessential going forward in, as we are dealing with certain legacy issues now and what we will be dealing with in the future about funding. So as much as that can happen with the mayor, that'd be great.
Yeah, I encouraged them yesterday in my conversation to maintain as much continuity as possible. They indicated that probably was the plan. Although, I mean, again, I didn't deal directly with the mayor, but I think that's the plan. But again, like Nick said, to the extent that we get to know each other at these meetings and share thoughts, it has worked very, very well in the past, and it's something that would be beneficial going forward. The only other thing I would add is that there next month is when we're required to elect new offices of the board, the chair, the vice chair, and the deputy vice chair. I, as I indicated back in September, did not want to continue as the chair, and this would be the time I told Kelly I would stay till June, but I would prefer somebody else to take over this role. So give that some thought as to who's willing to step up to that obligation and time commitment. I'll ask Kelly to follow up with folks over the next month so that we have a sense of who may be interested. Any other thoughts or comments at this point? Okay, I think next on our agenda is Josh. Are you going to do a legislative update?
Yes, thanks, Bill. So there are two bills, as I believe you know, that where DPSP is directly involved. The first is the bill filed by Representative Davis, HB 3375, dealing with a number of changes to our plan, a few of which would allow large amounts to come out of drop. The board, again, as you recall, voted last month to oppose the bill and to authorize staff, Kelly and myself, to work with our legislative consultants to try to do that. And we are doing that. We've provided them with information about the effects of the bill, and they are, you know, out trying to educate legislators on how devastating the bill would be if it were passed. So that has not come to committee yet. The other bill that we're involved with is the bill to put the pension system employees into TMRS. That's HB 4068, filed by Representative Parker. We are trying to get that heard in committee in the next few weeks. We're hopeful that that will occur. Obviously, there's I'm told that there's a lot of bills backlogged in the legislature in general and for the Pensions Committee in particular, like probably every committee. But it hopefully is a non-controversial bill, and we're hopeful that it will get heard maybe the third or fourth week in April, so by the committee. So that's the status of those two bills. The other bills, the only ones I would note to you which are of interest, which we had talked about previously, were a couple filed by Representative Anchia. I don't think it's a surprise since he is the chairman of the Pensions Committee. One bill is HB 3898, and that puts more restrictive provisions in terms of funding requirements and accelerates from what the current law is in terms of cities having to take action and the pension systems having to take action if funding levels get too low. That bill was heard on March 31st in committee, and it was left standing in committee, so I don't know if it will go anywhere. I do think it may not happen this session. It may be a next session or the session after, as these bills sometimes take a few sessions to kind of get legs, but I think it's a good general idea. I don't know if the details are particularly feasible, but I think it's an understanding that there are problems and that they need to be addressed with many local systems around the state. The other bill, also filed by Representative Anchia, HB 4566, is one that gives the PRB authority to bring direct actions if there's not compliance with requirements that pension systems have to do under the government code, specifically Section 802 of the government code. That has not been set for a committee hearing yet, and I don't know if it will be, and that would be an interesting bill. Currently, the PRB is only an oversight committee, and they give information to the legislature, but they do not have any authority to any enforcement authority with respect to any of those provisions. So those are the main bills that would sort of directly impact on DPFP. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Hey, Josh, this is Ken.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, this is Ken, Josh. We did talk about those bills at the legislative workshop for TEXPERS, and that was one item that was brought up, was giving the PRB more authority. And I guess the question was that, you know, the TEXPERS has, as well as other members of the pensions across the state, is, does the PRB even use the authority that they have now? And if they don't, then why would they want more?
I don't really think the PRB has any authority. They just have – their mandate currently under the statute is simply to provide information to the legislature. So the last couple of sessions, the requirements, especially the funding soundness restoration program, the PRB, I think, has done a good job of telling the legislature who is in compliance, who's not in compliance, bringing systems in to testify about how they're fixing their problems and things like that. So I think from where I sit, the PRB is doing what they are supposed to do under the statute. I think it's, and I don't know if the PRB is seeking this, I don't know who this HB 4566, I don't know if it's the PRB who believes they need that, or if Representative Mancia believes it, or both, or I don't really know. But I don't think there's really anything that the PRB is not doing now. They just don't really have any enforcement authority currently under the statute.
Okay.
This is Alan. I wanted to add something on 3375. That's the bill that we're opposed to on the emergency payments that could have the bad impact on the police and firefighters fund here. I've been visiting with Hilco, and I've been watching this thing on the calendar. It doesn't have a hearing in committee. The deadline for bills to get out of committee and get up for a vote on the House floor, which they still have to go through the calendars committee, is only about a month away. So I think that's a pretty good sign. It's not getting traction. Plus, there's no joint authors or co-sponsors, also a good sign. But we're entering also kind of a dangerous time, and I think this is kind of a good time to point out why we have legislative consultants, because you can have floor amendments. When I was there, many times bills I could not get out of committee, I would offer a floor amendment on the House. And if the parliamentarian determines it's germane to the subject matter of the pending bill, then it could get added. So I say it's a dangerous time, because even though bills may not get out of committee, a member may still offer them as an amendment, a floor amendment. So that's why I think it's so important for, you know, members of the legislature, the House specifically, to be educated on this, but also to have someone watching down there to see if that happens. And, you know, we do our annual reviews on the people who provide services to the fund, but I think it's just important to note that's one of the services we're getting right now, because, you know, we can't all be down there eyes on watching what happens on the floor every day. So I just wanted to point that out. But I feel good about that not passing, but we're not out of the woods yet, like Josh said. That's all.
Thank you, Alan.
Hey, Alan, this is Ken. I got a question on that just from some items that were brought up during the legislative workshop. If a bill, any bill, has such a negative impact on a particular system financially, it's probably, I mean, not 100% chance, but a 99.9% chance that it won't even get out of committee because it would devastate the fund. Is that theory kind of hold true?
Yes, and I believe it holds true in particular with the chairman of the Pensions Committee, Rafael Anchia. He used to be a member of the Dallas School Board. We called them unfunded mandates. And, you know, there were many of us who were opposed to Austin telling local government what they have to do but not providing funding for it. That said, it happens. I don't think it's getting out of committee. But my biggest concern now is a floor amendment. I mean, it could get out of committee, but I just don't think that's going to happen. Because even if it gets out of committee, it's less to go to the calendars committee, where most bills go to die, even if they get out of the first committee. But, you know, floor amendments are really what I'd be more concerned with at this point. And, you know, being able, having someone there, maybe it's Rafael and Chia, I don't know, be able to adequately articulate why this would have such a devastating, you know, unfunded mandate impact on this pension we've all been working so hard and making progress on. So I guess the answer to your question is yes and no.
Yeah, no, that's good. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And I guess, has Hilco talked to the appropriate representative down there to educate him on that issue, Alan, to your knowledge?
Well, they're working on it, yeah. I mean, they're right where you want them to be on having this thing under control. That's, I guess, all I could say to really sum it up.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for anybody, Josh or Alan, on any of this? Okay. Thank you. Kelly, do you want to do the contribution report then?
Yes, the contribution report is on page 19. It's pretty consistent with what you've, the trend you've seen in the last couple of years, actually. This is the April report, which has February data. In this report, the last pay period that the city provided contributions for, they were actually under their employee estimate by 162 employees. Police was under by 187, and fire had 25 extra employees. However, because of the large raises that they've done over the last couple of years, it those deficits haven't really hurt our contribution estimates. So for the month, actual comp pay was 105% of the hiring plan and 97% of the floor. And since inception to date, that we're at 101% of the hiring plan and 92% of the floor. So things are looking good. Are there any questions on the contribution report?
Well, when does the floor go away? Is that 2024?
It does go away in 2024. John, if you go to slide 21 for me, the floor is listed in the top chart. That's that first column. You can see the floor goes away in 2024, but it actually decreases in 2023. It goes from 6,043,000 a pay period down to 5,812. In addition to the floor going away in 2024, we do get an extra $13 million annually from the city as additional contributions. That also goes away in 2024. And that those numbers aren't included in this report.
How did 2023 happen? It goes down and then it goes back up the next year before going away.
So that was a negotiated, a difficult negotiation with the city. So originally when the city came out with the, here's our, you know, what contributions are going to be, we fought back about that because they were really these floor amounts and we didn't think they were reasonable and they insisted they were reasonable. So we went back and said, okay, if you believe these numbers, let's hard code them all in the bill. So I did that for 20 years and they of course didn't like that. So we ended up negotiating down to having it be their, the floor that they originally estimated for 5 years. And then really it's their hiring plan estimate for years 23 and 24. It was a negotiated, a hard-fought negotiated number.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Any questions for Kelly on this? Okay, next item, Kelly, is the trustee education.
Yes, so the trustee education is listed here. On page 25, you'll see there's three classes listed here. There's nothing new here. Nobody's asked to attend anything, but I wanted to point out specifically the first item on the list. It's a virtual class, which is free, the legislative conference webcast. The time isn't on here, but I can have Carol send that out to y'all. If you want to attend that, since it's free, you know, we don't need to know about, you don't need any approval, I guess, to attend it. Just let Carol know if you do attend it so you can get credit as, it's not part of your core, but I believe it would count as part of your subsequent training after you do the core. You could count these hours towards that. So that's available to you as well. But other than that, I don't need a motion on this item.
Okay.
Hey, Kelly. This is yes. This is Kent. I registered yesterday for that, for the virtual one, and it's a 12, I think it's a 12 p to 4 p session. And what brings interest to that is in addition to the bill that's in Austin that's going to show support for the Congress to attempt to eliminate the windfall elimination provision in Social Security. And I guess why that's important, I mean, to me it seems a little bit important, and I guess a lot of the board members don't know, even though the city does not pay into Social Security for the members, most of the members that, like on the police department, work their side jobs in security, or the firefighters that have businesses on the side, they're paying into Social Security. And when it comes time to apply for their Social Security, if they have their 40 points or credits or quarters, whatever it's called now, then the windfall elimination kicks in and they virtually get, I mean, it'll show you what you will get. However, you can just estimate taking two-thirds of that away, and that's what your final amount will be. So, and CFERS is going to discuss that in this virtual conference, and I think two of the sessions on that. So that's why it's of interest to me, if anyone else wants to know about it. And I don't have a problem next month putting it on an agenda item for me to report back as to, you know, what went on.
Good. I mean, we have a standard item, which is actually our next item here, Kent, for your attendance at the annual conference in December. So if you could, we'll put you on the agenda for next month to just report on what you've learned at that, if, or anybody else who decides to attend.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Do you want to give us a brief update on what you learned at the Texport annual?
Yeah, absolutely. So according to the agenda, I did go to Austin for the legislative workshop for Texfers, and as the commercial says, it was just okay. And the reason why, and even Texfers admitted the shortcoming, a lot of the reps, state reps, weren't available because it was just so late in the session, and they had a lot of things going on. They made promises that some made promises that they would be there, and it just didn't fall through. They evidently got too busy or whatever, and Texfers admitted that because of the pandemic, they couldn't have it earlier on like they wanted when the sessions first got started. It was in the middle, and there was just too much activity going on. For instance, Anchia was supposed to visit us Wednesday morning for an hour for a question and answer, and then that got pushed back to, okay, he can't make it, but he'll Zoom. And then the day before the conference, we were told that he's not even going to be able to do Zoom. So there was a lot of activity going on, so we didn't get to talk to any of the reps or ask them any questions. I was able to talk with Paul Brown, the president of Texfers, and let him know our standing on 3375. And you know, one thing that was mentioned in the workshop, when you fight the bills that you don't want, then you have your information available as much as you can. And I emailed Kelly and asked her, you know, do we have the information on this that causes us not to want this bill? And Kelly, thanks for sending me that. That was spot on. That is exactly what Texfers needed. And I don't know if they wanted it, but I gave it to Paul and I said, you know, your position, Texfers' position, and correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, on this, they tend to oppose bills only when it affects the entire state systems. I mean, ours is more or less of an individual bill. They have it on a watch list versus an opposed list. And I spoke with Paul and I said, look, I understand your position on oppose and watch, but here's our statistics. I gave it to Kelly. I got it from Kelly. Here's all our stats on why we don't want this bill to go through. So any help from you, because it would shut down our system, we would appreciate it greatly. So he was very receptive to that. I don't know if he's going to be able to, you know, do anything about it, but it's out there. Texfers knows about it, and they know why we don't want it. And it makes sense because of all the stats that Kelly gave me. And then Paul, you know, was mentioning in class that, you know, he was talking about the PRB. He gave kudos to Kelly as far as testifying before the PRB, testifying before the Pensions Committee, mentioned what a great job she does at all that. And so, I don't know, Kelly, I see maybe a speaker banner on your name tag at future Texas conferences. I don't know. I didn't offer you up, but I know I didn't offer you up, but I'm just saying, you know. And Texfers also has in their website a bill tracker, so anybody can go on there. You don't have to be a member. It's open to the public. You can go on there and you can look and see what bills are being tracked for that week. Just for anybody's information, this week it's just everything to deal with the teacher's retirement system. So that's all that's going on from what I can tell this week, as far as what, you know, hearings and what's going to be discussed. Let's see what else, as far as protocol goes for, COVID, I mean, they did a great job, the hotel as well as, the meeting. Everyone was 6 feet apart. All the protocols were there, masked, everything. So everyone was very safe on that. Let's see what else, I think that's about it. I was able to meet with our fiduciary attorney. Chuck Campbell was there, so I got to visit with him Tuesday night in depth. Hopefully, Josh, you won't send us a bill. I mean, it, you know, but we'll see. That's about it. Anybody have any questions on any of the meeting? I mean, like I said, we didn't have any face-to-face with the reps. That doesn't mean it was a total bust on the conference. One item I told Texpers I think we need to do at the conference in May is to have a one-hour session at least on summarizing all the bills that you know we were looking at. The Texpers was doing a watch on as well as opposing, and getting out of a strategy for the next 18 months. I mean, we know what our strategy is, but getting everyone a strategy for the next 18 months is because some of these bills are just, I mean, they just keep being introduced every session. So they probably will never go away. So hopefully they'll put that on their one of their class meetings. But that's about it. Anybody have any questions?
That's a pretty complete report, Ken. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Kelly, you going to update us on our communication plan?
Yes. As you recall, at the February board meeting, Richard Molnax from Fleshman Hilliard came and talked to the board about developing a communication plan, and it's a multi-phase process. During the meeting, he talked about this phase one of the process, and phase one, just to remind you, is they would meet with some members of the board and staff to develop a framework for the communication plan, and he had said at the board meeting that the amount to do that would be a not to exceed $20,000, and that's what the board's motion was. However, when he went back and kind of planned the effort to get to that phase one, he would like to increase that estimated cost to a not to exceed $25,000. So I'm bringing this item back to you for consideration of increasing that $20,000 to $25,000. And just so you're clear, what you're getting for this process is the effort to meet with the board and some staff to develop a framework. And what that will look like is really a PowerPoint, a high-level PowerPoint that gets presented to the board to say, okay, here's what we think. You need some social media or, you know, whatever that looks like. And then there'll be another phase where they put kind of meat on the bone of what really that looks like. But even after that second phase, you still have done nothing towards the communication plan. The cost for actually implementing the plan will be determined based on what that plan actually ends up looking like. So I wanted to let you know that as well. Are there questions about this issue? I know it's complicated and multi-steps.
When will they bring the phase one results back to us?
I think that's really going to be dependent on when they can get everybody scheduled to meet. So I would assume as soon as we give them the go-ahead to do this, they'll start working, you know, with people's calendars. I'm not sure how many people they're going to have together, but I would think in a couple of months, really, you know, assuming we can get an agreeable time where everybody can get together. I wouldn't think it would take them, you know, more than, say, 6 weeks after that meeting to put something together for the board to consider for the next step.
This is pretty important. I think we should try to get them to give it a higher priority and try to move this along.
Okay.
Hey, Bill, can I ask a question? It's Gilbert. Yeah, and thank you. I didn't mean to jump on top of you talking. Kelly, is there I think it's very reasonable, et cetera, but is there a bigger than a bread box? What do we think this total thing is going to cost? In other words, do they intend to say, okay, I did all this framework, like here's a Volkswagen plan, here's the Cadillac plan. You know, I'm just trying to get a sense for what's this total look like.
So my guess is the total is going to be more than you think, because that's how it works with these types of firms. I'm always surprised at the cost of things. But what I anticipate seeing is they come back with a recommendation, kind of an a la carte thing. You know, here's what we recommend. You can do newspaper ads, and you can do mailers, and you can do social media, or you can do whatever, and then we would kind of pick and choose. You know, we don't think we need to do media buys because our audience is the city council or the legislature, or we do think that's important. So I think we're going to see an a la carte kind of menu of what that plan looks like together, and it really is going to be fleshed out based on what they hear from the group we're trying to accomplish with this plan. So I don't have an estimate for you, but if I would say it's going to be more than you think, just because I know how this works, even though I don't know what that number is.
I understand. Well, let me ask you this. Do we have anything in the budget? I mean, are we going to go ahead and start budgeting this? Even if it's like, I'm making up a number, $200,000?
So I'm not going to recommend putting anything in the budget until we know what that is. So once we know, I think this $25,000, we can probably absorb that in the budget. We'll know more at the end of the year if we actually need to do kind of a formal budget amendment. But I wouldn't think we need to just kind of guess on a number at this point, but when the board approves the next phases, we may want to do a budget amendment at that time.
Okay, thank you.
Kelly, this is Michael. Was there any rationale for the increase in the 5,000, or was the 20 arbitrary in the original estimate?
I don't know if I want to use the word arbitrary. I think he threw that out on the spot without kind of putting together the math of, okay, here's the people on our side we want to be involved, and here's the prep work, and here's the amount of time during the meeting with the people, and here's the admin cost. I don't think he had done that work. So I think he had kind of a ballpark idea, not completely arbitrary, but because we put him on the spot to come up with a budget or a number, I think that's what happened there. And once he started putting the pieces together, it just added up to a bigger number.
The only concern I have is that the 30 to 40 estimate all of a sudden becomes 50 plus, or, you know, we continue to kind of escalate here.
I think that is a concern, but I think we're going to have to monitor that as we go along.
Right.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, if not, staff is recommending a motion to increase the not-to-exceed amount by $5,000 for the first phase to $25,000 versus the $20,000. Do we have a motion to approve that?
Mark, I'll make the motion. Bill, it's Gilbert.
Mark made it. Gilbert seconded it. Anybody opposed? Okay, we've approved that. Then we can go forward with that, Kelly. And we just need to kind of try to stay on top of that and monitor that as we go through it.
Okay.
Okay. is your report, the executive director's report?
Yes. So on this item, item A says the NZPERS monitor. That actually is not available. They apparently have had some printing problems or layout problems, so that isn't available, but Melissa will send that to you when it is available. As far as open records requests go, we've received two since the last board meeting, and those have both been filled. I have already, based on the public comment of Officer Smith this morning, sent an email to Carol already asking for that information. So I'm not sure if we're going to log that as an open records request or not, but we will provide that information to him probably later today or tomorrow at the latest. And I didn't have anything else on this item. Thank you.
Okay, next, I'll just preface it. As you know, Ken Custer has been our CIO for the last 3 years and is going to be leaving us at the end of this month to take a job with a startup consolidation of the police funds in Illinois. I just would, for the record, Ken, thank you very much for your service. You've done a very professional, thorough job. We made a great hire. We are very sorry to see you leave and wish you could stay, but hopefully we can stay in touch and you can be available to us periodically if we have issues on any of these more complex issues you've been working on and become an expert in. So thank you, and we wish you well. But having said that, we're going to make you go through and do one final report for us. So can you give us the portfolio update?
Sure. And Bill, thank you for those comments, and thanks to everyone, both staff and the board. It's been a very rewarding time down in Dallas, and I'm leaving a lot sooner than I had. Well, I never intended to leave, and it was really just kind of the nature of this opportunity. And I just want to emphasize that kind of everything in my mind, it's been hard work, and I came in with my eyes wide open, but I just feel like things are. It was just a really good opportunity, a really good experience for me down here. And I also want to emphasize that there was a good investment process in place, you know, before I got here, and it was just afterwards in terms of how actions are tracked and pushed forward through the investment team. And Ryan was coordinating that before I was here, and he's still, you know, he's been coordinating it since then. And so I think that everything is very much kind of organized, and I think a lot of progress will continue. And also, we've made significant progress in some key initiatives in recent weeks, and I'll talk about that in a moment. So thanks to everyone. Moving into kind of the more mundane stuff, John, if you can go to slide 30. And I want to kind of move through this and then get on to the more fun stuff, which is Ryan going through the private market cash flow projections, as well as a really good conversation from the folks at AEW. So on this slide, I just want to call your attention to the date, which is kind of in the upper left next to that red writing. We had to pull this as of March 26th because it was the timing of when this board was, but it doesn't include the payroll at the end of the month. And so if you look down a few rows, you'll see cash is currently $120 million. You know, versus the target of about 58, but at the end of the month it was at 91. And so that included kind of the typical, usually 26, 27,000 that goes out at the end of the month, million for the payroll. But then the other issue is we put 13 million additional into a global, the Northern Trust passive. And so as we've been getting private market assets liquidated, we've been continuing to add to that. We also put $2 million into investment-grade bonds, which is shown here, so that $75 million includes that. But bank loans, that's kind of an end-of-the-month, first-of-the-month contribution, so that is not shown yet. So anyway, just a few things that were happening at the end of the month. And I guess, you know, even after that, we're still going to be a little heavy on cash, and, you know, we'll go back and take another look about we're kind of looking through to June to make sure that we're kind of thinking about what payments are going to have to be made and what cash is coming in. But I think this looks like there's room to make another contribution into global equities. But that's just conjecture on my part right now. I haven't worked with the team on that yet. Turning to the next slide, John, on the initiatives. So Ryan's going to go into more detail about recent distributions and projections, but we did get $24 million since the last meeting. We've been doing a lot of work. Of course, Lone Star continues, but also on the HUF funds, and there is a memo with an update kind of on recent activity and status. That's in your additional confidential material on diligence in page 78 in your packet. And so, main thing there is just nothing breakthrough there, but just kind of an awareness that there are, valuation issues there that, it's an energy fund and there's a lot of risk left in there. We're on top of it as much as we can be. And Brian, thanks for your work. He pulled that together. Next bullet talks about the redeploying of distribution, which I've already covered. Also, we've made significant progress with Makita on the asset allocation, and so we've looked at a lot, and we're going to take that back to the Investment Advisory Committee. We've requested, and they've agreed to a special meeting, which will happen on March 20th, to review the asset allocation and anticipate an update on that at the May meeting. And then, as Leo's talked about, that's something that could be iterative. We have to go back and forth a couple times, but a good progress there. Also on the small cap search, we've taken the U.S. equity or U.S. small cap first, and this was an opportunity for us to kind of work through get used to the new eVestment database that we subscribed to earlier, actually late last year. It's a real helpful tool and has, I think, strengthened the search process kind of in conjunction with Makita. And so we've got, we're kind of narrowing down a list, and we're going to talk to the Investment Advisory Committee about, where we sit on that and the next steps. But I think we're tentatively, timeline would have something to the board in the July timeframe. And we already talked about my departure. So I think any questions on that, or else I'll turn it over to Ryan to talk about the private market cash flows.
Ken, when did you say the next Investment Advisory Committee? Is it April 20th?
Yes, April. I think I might have said March 20th when I think about what I just said, but it's going to be April 20th, and it's at 10 o'clock.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, Ryan, over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Kent. John, we're going to start on slide 37. So, as Ken mentioned, we had a solid quarter of activity to talk about, and then I'll get a little bit more into the forward projections. Ended Q3 at $682 million in private market assets. This is a bridge chart going back to the formation of the new board. So you can see we started at $1.2 billion. We've had about $570 million in distributions, $44 million in capital calls, and a decrease in market value of $68 million. But kind of just looking back at when we started diving into tracking the private market asset sales in more detail, we're almost about halfway through going from 1.2 down to the 682 number. On slide 38, John, this shows kind of quarterly activity for Q1. You can see we had a few small capital calls into some of the private equity funds. We received $46 million in distributions back, with the big sales coming from Camel Square and Spring Valley. You can see that $1.8 million distribution from the J.P. Morgan Maritime Fund. Look at that as a possible sign of life that we're going to start seeing a few more distributions out of that fund. And as Ken mentioned, we were able to redeploy $17 million out of this back into the liquid portfolio. So on 39.
Just Ryan, is Museum Tower at the final thing, or do we still have one unit left there?
We've sold the final unit, but we still have some cash at the on the balance sheet. So we have a few bills to pay. We talked about this week doing one more distribution from that, and then probably have one more residual one down the road. But we do have some cash sitting there right now that we're looking to distribute shortly.
And the only other asset that we have over there is two storage units, that we are going to kind of auction off to the highest bidders over there to get some additional money, and then some closeout issues related to the trademark and the website. So we're getting very, very close.
That's good news.
Okay. 39, we reformatted this chart a little bit. You can see the detail a bit more, but the blue bars are showing quarterly distribution activity. The orange bars are capital calls coming out. And then the tracking line across the middle is cumulative net inflows from the private markets portfolio. Left axis is showing numbers on the quarterly, and then the right is cumulative. So just over $800 million in cumulative since Q4 of 16. If you look at kind of the last bar on the right there, the $46 million that we received in Q3 was actually the highest quarter we've had since Q3 of 19. So as you guys know, in 2020, the distributions were quite a bit muted. So happy to get some distributions coming back again. On slide 40, talk a little bit more about the adjustment we've been doing on the market value and what we expect to see kind of going forward the next few months on this. Currently adjusting by 15.2%, that's $682 million down to $578. And you can see in that table at the bottom that all of the adjustments are lying within private equity and real estate right now. And actually 95% of the adjustments are coming from the RCH portfolio and Lone Star. And what we are kind of expecting to see happen is we get Q4 reporting from AEW on the RCH portfolio. The value will probably come down slightly, but not nearly as much as we've been adjusting. So we've probably been a little bit conservative with that. And then we're going to be booking some adjustments on Lone Star that will bring those down to the adjusted values or close to them. So I would expect that within the next few months we'll stop having a need possibly to show adjustment at all, and our actual reported NAV will be what we think the, you know, truest, closest as possible to the NAV we should be carrying, noting that there's still some, you know, legacy private equity assets that there are valuation concerns around, such as Hoff. So,
Brian, I just want to stop for a second here and just editorialize for a minute, because the key value of this was that of this adjustment process was to allow us to rebalance on a more realistic basis. Because if we had not been kind of evaluating the rebalancing using this, we would have had more in fixed income and less in equities. And so, in hindsight, it was very helpful to us to kind of ride more of the equity rally that we've been having. So. I just kind of wanted to go back and, you know, review why we were doing that when we saw that the NAVs kind of were likely very, you know, I don't want to say erroneous, but not what they, you know, not actuality. And so it's been helpful. But like Ryan said, probably the need for that is going to go away. Sorry to interrupt, Ryan, but just had that thought.
No,
thank you.
That's helpful. Okay. Moving ahead to 42, we'll get into a little bit more on the forward projections, what we expect the rest of this year and into 2022 and 2023. As a reminder, in the additional confidential materials, we are building all these projections on asset by asset detail and kind of have a schedule for each line item. So that's all been provided. All the schedules are there. Obviously, we have more clarity over the next 12 months on what's going to occur in the real estate portfolio than we do in private equity. The bulk of the remaining distributions in 2021 are going to be coming from the real estate and natural resources portfolio. We're expecting about $106 million in remaining distributions this year. $28 million of that I'd call kind of confident in process, either under contract or in the sales process right now. And I would expect to see that kind of by the end of Q2 or shortly thereafter. Over half of the distributions we're talking about in 2021 are coming from the AEW portfolio. And Ron's going to get into a lot more detail next on what's driving those sales. And then you can kind of see the uptick in the line into 2022. and what's driving that. We have a lot coming out of the AEW portfolio 2022 as well, but you know, on the private equity legacy assets, we are looking at a 3-year time period and just saying, you know, we're not positive when Huff or, you know, Lone Star is going to sell, but we're slotting them to start occurring next year. So that's what's kind of driving that quarterly uptick in pace and less clarity and certainty there for sure. Any questions on that? Okay. I'll move ahead to 44 to close it out. So this is just showing kind of allocation percentage to the private markets assets. Currently, we're at 30%. Looking forward, we're expecting to kind of dip below the target allocation of 15% sometime towards the end of 2022 or into 2023, which means that at that point we could be fully allocated to the liquid portfolio and start making new investments into the private market asset classes. So in summary, happy to see an uptick in activity in Q1 and actually dust off the implementation plan and start reinvesting into the public portfolio. So if there's no questions, we'll move ahead and let you guys talk to Ron.
Okay, any questions for Ryan before we start? Okay, we're going to now go into the real estate. We're going to do a first portion, an open session, and then we will go into closed session to get into more of the financial implications. And we'll stay in closed session then for a Lone Star update as well as an update on some personnel issues that we briefly mentioned. My guess is, looking at our estimated time schedule, we're going to probably be in closed once we go for almost an hour and a half, and then we will only be coming back to make any approvals of any resolutions that come out of the closed session. So for those in the public, you can hang on, just come back in, but I would guess we're going to be pretty close to 11 o'clock by the time we come back to open session. So with that, Ron, Mark, can you just kick us off with the open session portion?
Yeah, Bill, I'll kind of handle the intro, and we'll move straight into closed. Ron and Mark, you guys are on the line now, though?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, awesome. Okay, so AEW took over this portfolio in 2015 from CDK. Two remaining holdings are Rev Consolidated Holdings and Campbell Square. John, if you go to 46, please. We're actually going to start with Campbell Square today because we're looking for an approval there, and then we'll get into the RCH portfolio. As a reminder, Campbell Square is a wholly owned site in Phoenix that's in the process of being redeveloped. We approved rezoning in late 2019, and demolition site work and some sales have actually commenced. And then we'll be talking about the redevelopment opportunity there. RCH portfolio, I'll let Ron describe that in much, much more details. We'll get into it, but just a reminder, it's a 50-50 real estate operating company based in Phoenix with Red Development, and it's very complex with many underlying holdings, different levels of partnerships and in development land and operating properties. So with that, I think we can transition over to closed and turn over to Ron.
Okay, John, why don't we go into the closed session, if you can